Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, this is Pablo Zabaleta.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Kevin Phillips.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members. And get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy. Pat Nevin was a unique footballer and is now a thoughtful, reflective, fun media commentator. He's also a music obsessive and a man in possession of the best Doug Rugvi anecdote ever. And if you don't know who Doug Rugvi was, I'm coming after you. So you can guess, it was only a matter of time until he joined us as a guest on The Big Interview. We spent a brilliant couple of hours in Pat's company covering a great deal. Why John Terry is misunderstood, in certain senses at least. How good Eden Hazard can become, why he hasn't already, why the Irish sports media is on another level altogether, and how Pat stood up to racists on the terraces during his career. This interview was recorded in the function room of an outstanding Edinburgh pub. Thanks to Sean and all the staff of the St Andrews Brewing Company at a house in Broughton Street Lane in Edinburgh, which set the perfect indie tone for a memorable big interview. I was startled to hear a perspective that I don't have as much grip on, but you talked about a guy who has obviously got you transfixed and he's now moved into management. You talked about John Terry. Mm-hmm. And in my small number of interactions with him one-on-one, I've seen players around the Chelsea training ground, oh God, it's just John. And they obviously have a mixture of fear and awe and love. Mm-hmm. And in the interviews I've done with him one-on-one, he rips up any stereotypes you bring into the room, because there are certain people who are just commanding. I don't know if it's what they transmit or how the haircut is, how the eyes are, what the words are, I don't know. But like, in terms of listening to somebody communicate back, he's one of the most riveting people I've ever come around. And you extrapolate from that, don't you? If you've never had the gift to play professional football, like you, we all kind of go, what if I was playing with that guy? And my judgment is that it would have been one hell of an experience being led by or playing alongside John Terry. And it seems you are quite struck by him as an individual, not just as a footballer.
Yeah. I hate falling for the tropes that I'm fed, be it media, be it anyone. Yeah. And you make a decision about somebody before you meet them. Because many people have done that about me. Hmm. And then they meet me and they go, oh, you're not really like that at all. But they've decided you are. I mean, you only need to go on social media and find that out. But I had made my decision about John Terry before I ever met him, because the things he'd done wrong, which he has done plenty of things wrong, and certain specific things are almost anathema to me as a human being. You know. And I met him and I thought, God, he's so disarming. That's extraordinary. And then I spoke to him a few times, not a huge amount of times, and just thought, I'm not finding any weakness here. And I immediately started thinking, actually, you're a sociopath, because everybody is utterly, and you used the word awe before I did. Everyone is slightly in awe of you, and it's not necessarily actually because of his caps or what he's won. It's actually not that. It's something else. It's the personality, and he's given off. Now, I've met one or two. We mentioned earlier on, we have chatted beforehand about Jock Stein, obviously one of those types of people, and there are very, very few of them around. Well, very few that I'm kind of taken by anyway to that level. So I started watching them closer. So not spending time speaking, but being in company where he was in and watching him and thinking, right, is this an act? Is this, are you manipulating people? And he didn't seem to be doing it for anyone else. He was just being who he was. Mm. And it's an extraordinary reaction. So if you ask someone like Didier Drogba or Lampard or Mourinho or anything, they'll all say the same.
Impressive, strong, powerful, self-willed men, and yet they're impacted
yet
similarly.
Yeah, they're going, wow, he's just an incredible person. And the classic old line, you would almost do anything for them. You know, now, I don't know if I would have been like that playing with him, but I'm quite struck by it. Also struck by the intelligence. It's a different type of intelligence, isn't it? The type of intelligence that you have dealing with people. And he's extraordinary at that. So when I looked at all the people coming through and thought, well, who would be a good manager? You know, and there's loads of them there from Giggsy and Rio and Frank and all the rest of it. I would put him at the top of the ones most likely. Not definite. Absolutely nobody gets a definite to succeed in management because it's a stupid game. And you need to get the right time, the right club, the right situation as well. But if I'd put money anyone, it would be him, because I would suspect that he would get, and it's a hate cliches, but he would get that dressing room and those players doing everything. And there's a big thing about any management, it's not football. I mean, one of the things I studied before I became a footballer was management, is maximising the potential of the people that are working under you. If you can do that, you can do no more. I have a massive suspicion that he can do that. Mm-hmm. As good as anyone.
Automatically, probably, rather. I mean, albeit that he is analytical, I think, particularly, because I think he's very streetwise. And that isn't in any way pejorative, I don't think. I think, you know, London was, its personality was, a very streetwise city, one where you had to be quite sharp and quick, but people around you, not just about yourself, in which to survive. And I think he has that, but also, I think that when you've got, I don't know what presence is, or how you radiate intensity. But he does do both of those things, and I can't explain it, but it is the truth, I think.
We are, you're dancing around being able to say, it's impossible to tell. Because if there's a simple way of telling it, people would copy it, or do it, or affect it.
Yeah.
You know, and is it Burns? Was it? No, not Rabbi, the other one, George, who said, you know, if you can fake sincerity, you've got it made. To be fair, it's just something special. It's something other. And I'm very hugely impressed with that side. Doesn't mean you see you're impressed with every single part of a person's personality. In the world that we live in just now, that's usually picked up as a quote and people then dig you back in, but I don't care.
No.
I remember at a time, John was going through a really bad time with some of the front page stories, and I went to a company and said, look, I want to make a documentary about him, and I want to put a different spin on it. And, what do you mean spin? I said, I just want to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And they absolutely weren't doing it. And I said, well, wouldn't you rather to have the truth?
Out of fear that they might be perceived in a certain way.
Exactly.
But what's happened to, like, articulacy and freedom of speech and democracy? That's a tiny little, you know...
Well, that's you're talking that
microcosm
of it. That may have been 7, 8, 9 years ago. And that's the case 7, 8, 9 years ago. I'm seeing it a lot worse.
The Met Police not investigating election fraud because of politically sensitive times.
Exactly. So I've kind of, when I have any of my falls... that I will have things that I will say.
By being honest.
Because I will say something honest. I said something honest the other day on radio, which got me tons of abuse in various places.
Go on.
And I feel so comfortable with it. It's a really nice feeling. There was a game, Spurs were playing against Cardiff, and I was at that game. And there was a sending off. I don't know if you saw it, it was last Saturday night. One of the Cardiff players made a tackle from behind, but put his leg over the top, and it looked horrible. Mm. To which I said, yeah, that's a booking, but you get sent off and it's a bit harsh because the opprobrium that was raining down on me, I was saying, but he wasn't trying to hurt him.
Mm.
He was just basically bringing him down. Mm-hmm. It looked ungainly, clumsy, and they abused you. How can you think that? Well, I'll tell you how without being arrogant. I've probably had as many tackles as anybody around, anyone you get around just now with 800 professional games and the type of player who would get that tackle. That's not the one I was worried about. That's not the one I was, you know, it was going to injure me badly. That would get me annoyed.
The one where you knew either in advance or once it's impacted that somebody was out to do you.
Yes, you knew, you actually knew it before it came, the one that was trying to do that, and that was more common then than it is now. But that was not a tackle that was out to hurt. Now, he could have got hurt if he'd have felt, I mean, Salah fell in an odd way in the Champions League final.
Kiev.
That wasn't a deliberate attempt to go and dislocate his shoulder, for God's sake.
Yeah.
The madness of people suggesting of that.
Although he's a he's a brutal tough guy. Yes. He's been portrayed as like
madness.
Hess or Himmler. This evil scheme that he's been planning for weeks, and he's falling just as I wanted him to. There's the pop I was waiting for.
It was laughable. It was actually laughable.
Thank you.
Hearing people saying that. And I'm going, there isn't a human being in the world that is capable of doing that and making that happen. Don't be daft. So when you're on and if you're doing an analysis or something, I have to be honest. And even when I'm saying it sometimes, I know I'm saying it and I know the reaction it's going to get.
Yeah.
And some people think, well, you're just saying that for a reaction. Mm. In that case, no, I will back it up.
Yeah.
So that's where we are now, that I will continue to say whatever I feel I want to say, but I will not say it for pure effect.
No.
And that's the other side of it in things that I've talked on media, television, radio, whatever. I'll quite often be expected to say, oh, he should be sacked. Mm-hmm. I won't say that. I'll say, look, here are the circumstances. There are a lot of circumstances. Again, a lot of chat a while back about Gordon Strachan being the Scotland manager, and he didn't get Scotland to the Euros and World Cups, etc. And I'm looking at it thinking, he's maximising the potential of all those players.
Yeah.
Didn't get done very well in Scotland. Mm-hmm. I said, it doesn't matter. If you get rid of him, you better have somebody that's better. Mm-hmm. And Big Eck, good friend of mine, but I don't know if he's better than Gordon. In fact, I'm convinced he's not.
Or find six or seven new good players that don't exist.
Exactly, maximising the potential of what he's got. So that's all you can do. And sometimes it's not an easy headline, that, is it? Is it an easy headline as sack him?
I'm really glad that somebody's walking into the gale, mm-hmm. Because it like all monosodium glutamate, it becomes addictive. Mm-hmm. So once you get into a cycle of people wanting to hear, yes, sack him, mm-hmm. it's what you say, because it is quite addictive to say, okay, let's move on, let's get rid of that subject and let's move on to the next subject, whether it's for the right reasons, whether it'll have the right effect or not. And also, just like at the guillotine, there's a natural, we all have a natural bloodlust, sadly.
Not me, actually I've never had, but the other side of it I see, which I've worked in the media for quite a long time now, is that I know some of the guys are clever enough and cute enough to know that that's what sells, mm-hmm. sells them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, some ex-players as well, you've seen it yourself. Yeah. And that's perfectly reasonable, it's a game. It's not for me, it's not a game, but for us it's a game, and it's a way of earning a living. And I used to be, and used to despise that. Mm. I don't anymore. I just see it's a game. There was a guy many years ago called Jimmy, Sanderson in Scotland, used to
do it. At the game caller?
It's no different now. It's exactly the same, only a different version.
Jimmy the first shock jock in Scotland.
Exactly.
Right?
Oh, so when you've seen it once, you're a bit dim if you can't see it happen again. So I watch. I find it all very interesting. I find the whole media circus is the wrong word, but the whole way that the media runs quite interesting. Again, we've talked in the past about how Irish media and sports very different from British media and sport.
Can we, because we both admire them, can we just say the guys who produce and talk on Off the Ball and News Talk, they're worth mentioning because they are that good. So.
Apart from me on a Monday night, could I do every Monday night?
They're some of the excellent workers in the Irish sports media, because we would include sitting captains too, but we both think well of those guys.
Here's a thought though. So the next question is, which don't wait to your questions away, why? And I asked somebody and I got a great answer once. Let me throw this one at you, or anyone listening. You look at British media, and not all of it, don't abuse all, because there's some very good journals out there, and many I hugely respect and I do read, but maybe less so than maybe times gone past, and it's easier to do the shock jock stuff a little bit. But if you go to Ireland, there is some shock jockey stuff, but you will get depth, and you will get intelligence, and you will get knowledge, and they will not apologise for it. I remember asking one of the guys, why is it? There's a cultural difference.
Yeah.
Why is it? And somebody said brilliantly to me once, it's your base newspaper. How do you mean? I said, well, if you say, what is the newspaper of the UK that everybody reads?
Evening Express in Aberdeen, obviously. do we have to say it out loud?
You have to say it out loud. It's sad, but it's
there's
true.
There's two villains over my lifetime. There's two villains. Mm-hmm. The Sun is one, and now the Mail is the other.
Right, so the Sun's the one, right? So that is the base, right? Now, it's not a newspaper I happen to read or get or anything, but I know that's the base of. When I say base, I mean that's where the culture comes from, because it's so big in the culture. Where's the base in Ireland?
I'd say the Times. The
exactly. You know. your first answer gives it away every time.
The Indian background too.
But that's the base. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
So the thinking comes from there. The idea comes from there, and it doesn't give you all the answer to it, but it gives you where
given that we're only exchanging ideas, what I've found, and I've spent a lot of time watching friends of mine play sport to a high level, or going there and watching sport, or working with the broadcasters that you're talking about, one of the things that I always say to them, and they may be, these two ideas might link, might tessellate, apart from Australia, or Australians, I've never met an audience in any country that has a greater thirst for all sports, whether it be their sport or not, than in Ireland. I've gone and worked in countries, or I know people from countries where there'll be a basket full of three or four or five sports that are extremely important and that country might be knowledgeable about. But when you go across Ireland, a greater part of that community is still playing sport and living a clubhouse idea, whether it be GAA or football or rugby. You get generations of families and neighbours all going down the clubhouse, seeing a game of an afternoon, going and watching competitive sport, maybe helping develop, because the local community has a, whether it be hurling or GAA football or soccer or rugby or golf or whatever they want you were in. So one, they're all much more deeply woven into the idea of what's sport for, how do you support it, who's any good. A young one's coming through. And they're much more diverse than our culture, I think, and that's helpful.
And part of the reason is where their base is. It's a wider one. You know, I don't know the full reason. Somebody will do a study into it once. But, you know, I go over there for quite a few years. I was doing Satanta over there. I was flying over there once a week. As I said, doing news talk. And to be fair, you'll say something sometimes, you'll be in one of the studios, you know, off air, and you'll say, what happened in the golf last week? And they'll say, oh, Harrington, you've seen the 13th, you know, he had that shot, you know, and he should have faded it. And you're going, it was just a vague question.
You know? Aye, he was okay.
And you get this noise coming from everywhere, and it's a sport picked out there. Anyway, so I think we're both big fans, and I'm certainly a big fan, and, you know, anytime I'm asked to do it, but it's to take nothing away from, you know, different types of journalism. And again, I want to always bring it back to them. I don't say what's good or bad. I say what interests me, and I've very much grown into that. I'm taught by my wife to have an opinion and believe in it, but not there is no more than one right.
Present a case. I'll do that. I think you know this is right. When we've been talking about John Terry, is he effectively just a modern Doug Rigby? This is not a visual medium, but I am showing Pat picture taken from the 1883 Cup Winners' Cup final. As I think Santiana is trying to lecture Big Doug with a finger wagging at him, and Doug's picking the other player up.
I can give you 20 minutes on Dougie.
Let's do that. Well, good or bad?
No, very, very quick.
Huntley legend.
Comes down to Chelsea when I'm there, and he's replacing an absolute legend, Joey Jones, who the fans love more than anyone else. And Big Doug's not always the
Joey
most...
Joey was born with tattoos, wasn't he?
Yeah, but in all the fist pumps and the rest before fist pumps were a thing. And Doug comes in, and of course he's rough and ready. We understand that. So he's come down, and being Scottish, we want the Scottish guys to do well. First training session, the ball's bounced and gone up. So I need to go up for the header with Doug. So I got there, put my shoulder in to head him. Honestly, it was like hitting a wall. Ouch! You banged your shoulder off him and you fell down again. And he just looked at you as if, what was that all about? Made of a different material than most of us. And there's a few guys like that. But he's the sweetest, nicest guy in the world off the pitch as well. And he did the nicest thing with me. He was there before we go into that. 83, round about that time. He played in the cup final against Rangers, I believe.
Immediately after that game.
Derek Johnson...
Ah, no, 79, yeah, where...
sent off.
Derek has admitted that he swindled the ref.
Yes, swindled the ref.
Pretending he'd been butted or whatever.
So Dougie comes down. Derek Johnson was at Chelsea at the time.
Of course he was, aye.
Same dressing, year, never spoke a word. Never said a word to each other. How can you do that?
Brilliant.
How can you sit in a small area?
I knew Dougie had Sicilian blood in him. I've always said he was from Sicily.
Nothing. And Dougie, Big Derek was a funny bloke, and he would try and rewind up nothing, complete and utter dead eyes. But I loved Dougie. He did this one great favour to me once. At the end of one season, my flat rental had run out. Changed days, eh? Player of the Year at Chelsea, I was on like 180 quid a week. Things have changed. Just
and you had nowhere to stay.
I had nowhere to live. And my rent had run out 2 weeks before I went back up north, you know, for the summer and come back down again. And Dougie says, oh, come and stay with me and my wife. And I went and stayed with Dougie in this lovely family setting, which is considered the life I was having at the time. It was weird. And it was lovely, and he took care of us. And I said, look, as a favour, mate, I'll take you out one of my nights out. And this was the very early days, which would years later would have been called raves. But then they were called... exactly. That shocked you. But then they were called...
It's a great thing about questions. You never know what can answer. If you're going to try to sell to me that you took Dougie to
be you're charity, right, it's going to be worse. It's going to get a lot worse. So I said, like, come out with me. And it was then it was called a warehouse party, right? So I've driven Dougie down to the south of Brixton, middle of nowhere. And we turned up there, and there was people like, if you remember the time, like Boy George or Marilyn or, you know, weird people were dressed very strangely. Some people were dressed in 18th century outfits. I remember, and you brought your own beer or whatever. There's Dougie standing there in the middle of it all, with a beer, wearing his Chelsea kit. He's actually wearing the full tracksuit, a shocking blue tracksuit. And I'm sitting there like hipster, kind of. And I go, this is, if only I could show people this. If only I had cameras to kind of explain it to people. And Big Dougie's first line after about 10 minutes, I said, what do you think, Dougie? And he went, didn't you know this sort of thing existed? It's just, I love Dougie. And a nice thing, you put a picture in front of me.
Yeah.
The weirdest thing about it, and the thing I loved about being involved in football and being involved in football, I was such an outsider within it, that things that other people would find normal, I found extremely strange. Mm. So you could almost put any player there, and I'll tell you a story about the weirdness of it, which from their perspective was perfectly normal how they behaved, and from my perspective as an outsider was, my nickname at the time was Weirdo with the players. And I'm thinking, no, I'm the normal one. You're all weird. And I was absolutely convinced about it. But he's a great guy, too.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Well, without making that, I can't let that go, without necessarily making that point personal to anybody who was weird in your experience, unless you want to, because... open...
By the way, weird's not bad. Interesting.
Yeah, come exactly. on. Weird's you're okay. selling snow to the Eskimos okay, there. I agree. One of the things that we do about this, although this is our Pat Nevin episode... It's also a real privilege to be able to open the curtains of the football world a little bit to people. So, tell the first anecdote that comes to your mind about the they're the weird ones, not me.
Right. I tell you a really stupid, simple one, right? So, dead simple one, I'm sure I've told before. It's just the first one that comes to my mind. I read a lot. I was very into serious literature, like Camus, as you do when you're younger. And, you know, but, of course, in the team bus, this looks weird. And I'm reading one day the short stories of Anton Chekhov on the bus, as you do. And one of the players, Dale Jasper, walks back up and says, "Oh, Patsy, I know one of your authors." And I went, "Really? Well, sit down. He sat down and he goes, "That's really Chekhov. I'm amazed." And he goes, "Yeah, but I didn't know you were a Trekkie part." And I went, "Not that Chekhov. No, different Chekhov, Dale." So, and that, cause I never have all these things happening all the time. And I'd be looking around for, can I share this with somebody? Scripted? And it always happened that I would find myself in what I thought was a normality. I remember often in games you'd say something, but you'd just say the words that came to you. So I'm playing near the end of my career, playing for Tranmere, setting up the wall. So the wall's set up, 20 yards out, this free kick, really tense time. The wall's set up, I'm on the side of the wall, I'm the guy charging the ball, but I'm round at the side, that way. I'm close, and the referee's there, and I'm 10 yards away, but I'm at an arc from, the referee says, get back, and I went, "What?" And he says, get back, and everyone's jostling, and I said, we're equidistant. The wall, the referee, the guy's taking it, and I went, equidistant. And I go, and it happened all the time. You just look at you as if to say, "That's a perfectly reasonable word."
Bloody words and the trouble they get you.
You don't think it's that weird.
Your dictionary,
So sometimes the words are interesting. We all love words, and I love writing, and still do a lot of writing. And quite often, I change my language and my accent for where I'm working. There's no point in me doing world service and using my Glasgow accent. You're wasting your time, mate. You're not going
to
understand.
Again, it would be quite nice to be understood if I'm on there.
So the idea, so you're not being passionate, you're just cleaning the voice up, and so you do that now and again. But sometimes, over the years with football, you had to do that with language as well.
Well, let's test your language now. And let's do a trick that we tried with...
There's only one person whose face I don't want to see coming here if it's a face, but carry on.
No, there's no faces at the moment. I'm just offering our companions the chance to visually represent what we've just talked about. Before we went and sat down with Chris Waddle, we had a big, long... It may seem that we'd never work on this and think about it, but before we went to see Chris up in Sheffield, we all talked about this idea that we love hearing a person's skills worked out, unpacked, described, because, as we didn't have your talents. And therefore, if you get a chance to ask somebody to explain it, it's a privilege. But often, as you know, people who've been in your position don't quite know how they do it. And we were struck by the build-up to a Damien Duff interview where he was excoriating about his own inability to teach young ones he walked off the pitch, he was embarrassed, he was angry. And he's changing that, but he was just... he was just embarrassed at. So we said, will we ask Chris about what he could do as an exciting, talented wide player, no, creative player? So we sat down and we said, look, how did you do it? And he just, and I imagine you can do something similar about your own skills, but it does interest me when you're in a one-on-one repeatedly, which you are, whether you are playing, whether you consider yourself a 10 or a striker or a winger, really often, and before we recorded, you talked about one of the one-on-one battles in your life against a diminutive quick Spaniard. Yeah. What did you do? How much did you think about it? How much did you analyse? How much of it was about, you know, physiology? Try and tell us a little bit about what made you special with the ball at your feet.
I'm going to really disappoint you. And I always disappoint people when I tell them about it. It was utterly worked out. Totally worked out. People always say the phrase, "Oh, you were naturally gifted." None, I'm afraid. It was all worked. Everything. From the age of about 3 or 4, my dad was a coach. He used to take me down to watch Celtic training. Mm-hmm. Used to be able to go
Barfield.
Yeah. Used to be able to go and watch. My dad read all the coaching books from Herrera onwards.
Gosh.
My dad would take me out every single day and we would work on techniques every single day of my life. So after work, my dad came home, a long work at the railways where he worked, and at 5 o'clock I'd be there, boots on, out, we'd do an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever. And we would work on all these different methodologies from Stanley Matthews, used to do the one with the sticks. So every single one. Then we go and watch, say, Celtic play. Now, it was a very fortunate time. This was the end of the Lisbon Lions and the start of the quality streak. So you're seeing Jinky and you're seeing Lennox and Auld, but you're also seeing Kenny and Louis McCarry and David Hay. And McGrain. And if any of them done a trick, I saw it. And we'd go and work it. And I'd get it. And I'd learn it. So I'd learn every single trick I'd ever seen. Now, this is before the time of videos and lots of games on TV. So every single one of them was worked and analysed and developed. And there was very few that you couldn't do after a while. But then it was to put them into a game at the right time. But because you'd done the infamous 10,000 hours, which I had done, by a very, very, very early age with this technical stuff, it was just there.
Why did you grimace when you said that 10,000 hours?
Because I know the history of that, and it wasn't Gladwell that came up with it originally. It was another man that came up with it originally, and 10,000 hours is a pat expression. But in actual fact, put that amount of time and effort into anything, you will become natural and become second for nature. 10,000 it's almost a...
It becomes automatic.
It's totally automatic. Can I give you a great example of it? There's a particular trick that I had, and I learned it off a couple of players. There was a player at Rangers used to the centre forward recently who was brilliant, Michael Moles.
Oh yeah, the Dutchman, yeah.
He had this trick. I used to use this trick all the time. But Michael used to do it as well as anyone I'd ever seen. It was play behind you, mm-hmm. wait for him to come over your shoulder. Mm-hmm. Anyway, either shoulder, doesn't matter. You better if he's taller than you. As soon as he's over your shoulder, I'm gone. I know I've beaten you. And I'm beyond you already. I'm already thinking what I'm going to do next, because I am going to drag you.
Lean forward and corkscrew.
And corkscrew, right?
Yeah.
So, and twist. And it's a special twist that damages your inguinal ligament, in case you're interested.
that was my next question.
Yeah. That was one of my favourites. I learned it very, very early on. I'd watched Moles is famously very good at, you know, the trick I'm talking about, the specific
does it
skill.
Have any relation to what Dalglish used to do?
To some degree, yes. And that's probably where
identical.
I got it. It's probably where I got the original, because he used to stick his backside in and roll them that way.
Yeah.
And I'd manipulated it. So that's one tiny little bit of it. So you're asking me what you do, you have one-on-one. I would always manipulate a situation to get the defender where I wanted them.
Yeah.
If you watch a tennis player like Andy,
yeah,
it's three shots before it.
Bring him to the situation that you want.
That's what you're doing. Now, when you're manipulating that, and you've got that, and you do that, and it works. And by the way, I know I'm going to be able to do it with you, because I know what you're going to do. Mm. I've already, in my mind, also checked around where everybody is. And by the time I get by that, I know that somebody's peeled off in the back post, I'm going to get there.
And they, presumably the more intelligent ones, kind of are doing the reverse to you.
Like, well, they were
doing. He's getting him, here's the role, I'll make my move.
Yeah. So they, that's just one
Aldridge
of those.
At Tranmere would have been one.
No, Dixon, he just did. They weren't as complicated. They just went in an area. Don't worry, you go there, I'll find you there. So they will go there. So you manipulate all of them, you learn with people around you. Mm. So when you're on those days, I'm going to say something, I'm going to couch it in such language that I'll try not.
Don't say equidistant.
No.
All right?
I watch, see, as you've mentioned before, I didn't like playing the wing. I never liked playing the wing.
I think anybody with a brain could see that you were somebody who, if you allowed the team that you was with you to compensate for you being able to go and find clever space, then you do special things. It looked like to me.
So that was it. And I had a couple of managers, only a couple of my entire 20-year career, that would allow that for only cut 3 or 4 years of my career. And it was so, freeing, and it was lovely. And then you look at it now and you watch Iniesta, and you watch Silva, and you go,
shit.
Why wasn't I allowed to do that? Why didn't you trust me? And now and again, when the managers did, it always seemed to work. But the bravery of the British game at the time wasn't there, because it was 4-4-2, it was 4-3-3. Mm-hmm. No one was playing between lines, no one was doing that.
Bet365, who love us and sponsor us, have said to us that they need to know from you. What's the greatest goal you ever scored?
Cool, I never think of it in those terms. Remember scoring a... Right, okay, best one. Often said by Clyde supporters. Playing for Clyde against... somebody, Stenhouse Muir, couldn't be, something like that. It was Alloa. I was in my second season there. It was icy. It was rock hard. I hadn't played well because it's not my conditions. It was really horrible, rutted ground. And with 10 minutes to go, I was beginning to get really infuriated because I knew that Celtic manager Billy McNeil had come to see me playing. And I thought, I've got to do something. So I got the ball out wide and went in a total mazy. Took it through. And many Clyde fans tell me it was every player on their team, but it was quite a lot of players, including the goalkeeper, stopped on the line and then back-heeled it in. And ran up towards the halfway line to look up where Billy was. Gone. He never saw it. And that was probably, it's probably the best. And one of the great things about it, it was never on camera, so I can lie about it and say it was better than it was.
Who's the best footballer Bet365 want to know? The best footballer that you've ever played alongside?
I change the answer to this all the time. I've been asked this quite a few times. I mean, look at me, I played with Kenny at Scotland, which is a strange thing to watch somebody growing up and then play alongside. So Kenny was fabulous. I mentioned a very short time Peter Bearsley. It was one of those players that would walk into any of the great teams now. But the one I often use is one because it would have been the best player. So it's a bit like me and my favourite bands. They would have been the greatest. But Norman Whiteside, when I was at Everton, and I played with him for 2 years, and you have to play with somebody, and then you realise, oh my God, I've not seen you giving the ball away yet. And I've been playing with you for 2 years in games and training, and nobody get the ball off you either. And I'm thinking, that's just wow. You couldn't tackle him. His body position was
very, very strong, man, also.
Unbelievably strong. Slow, everyone said. And then he told me one day why he was. It's because he had an operation when he was 17 that went wrong, which was a very. By the way, not telling you your job, do Norman. Fabulous.
Wonderful.
Fabulous.
Wonderful.
I mean, totally unexpected, right?
Okay.
But Norman apparently was a sprinter to top level before that in Ireland as a kid. So he had that as well. So you put him at centre back, centre midfield, centre forward, he'd have been one of the best players, if not the best player on your team. And everybody that played with him, like Strachan and people like that, they always say, he would have been the greatest. He would have been one of the best you've ever seen.
Yeah.
But by the time he was 23, he'd gone. The knee had gone. He was playing in one leg, and he still scored. I think it was nearly 20 goals that season. One leg. The guy is totally misunderstood, hugely intelligent. We've talked right at the start about John Terry, about people who are misrepresented, and totally and utterly. He is even more so than JT.
That's one of the most striking and convincing answers we've ever had on this series, ever, seriously.
Have a go at him, honestly.
And because, Norman clearly, when you see him coming through in the World Cup, that meant so much to me because it's where I went and discovered the world, he's
16.
And beating Spain with Northern Ireland, playing with a team of men, playing in a 10-man team because Maradona, he's sent off, and holding his own then, and I hadn't extrapolated that maybe several years later he may still be that good.
I'm not going to tell you the story of the injury. One day ask
him.
I'm not going to steal your question, right? But one of the questions people often ask, what's the most important moment in your career? And my important moment has never ever changed. It was early days, first season at Chelsea, and I used to walk home after a game, lived up in Earls Court. And I walked out and I played well and I scored again. And I walked out, and as I walked up the road, this old guy just walked in beside me. He goes, you're Nevin, aren't you? Yes. came out to see you play today. I don't get out much anymore. I really wanted to see you play. I hear you're a talented player. And you entertained me today. It was great. And I went, oh, great. And I went to speak to him and he just walked away. And I thought, that's why I play football.
Yeah.
That is utterly and completely why I play football. Because he's come out. I've told a million stories. Maybe he was on his own. He'd lost his wife or whatever. Yeah. But I got him out. He'd done that. He'd had that time, that moment, and I'd helped give him it. And I thought, didn't get any better than that.
And it stayed with you all this time.
And it always made, I never really had to. I always give 100% every game. I'm a really, really hard-working guy in my football games. Is always, always, always hard-working for the entirety of each game. And wouldn't be because my dad never missed many games, because he always came to all the games. But even without my dad, as long as I knew that guy,
yeah,
or somebody other guy that I'll never meet, gets that moment. So you don't know about this podcast. You don't know who might touch that you say something about somebody.
I believe that.
And it is there. And it's a lovely moment when it happens and it comes back to you and you think, that's lovely. And it's not selfish. It's just a great share.
Last one from our lovely sponsors, Bet365. And it's a good one. Will Chelsea win the title during Maurizio Sarri's time at the club? In fact, sorry, Bet365, I'm going to change that. Will Chelsea win the title during Maurizio Sarri's first season at the club? Brackets, Graham's part of this. And are you enjoying the brand of football?
Right. Number one, you either expect a yes or a no there. And you're going to get the weirdest answer. Don't care. Absolutely don't care. Because it's so lovely to watch. And it's so enjoyable to watch. I want them to be successful with my team. You know, Hibs is my team in Scotland now. Chelsea is my team in England. But the way they're playing is so joyous. It's so lovely to watch. I was at a game recently and Liverpool scored a late equaliser. Great goal, Sturridge, fantastic. And in times gone by, I would have walked out there because I was doing it and I'd have got anger, fury. The place was buzzing.
Yeah.
The fans were like, oh, it wasn't that great. You've massive rivals in Liverpool.
Yeah.
An ex-player goes and smacks one in the top corner in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And you're
should be all tribal and angry and we've been robbed.
Not there. How can you change an entire ethos of a club in 7 weeks, which is what he's done? By the way, it's extraordinary. It's absolutely extreme. That's to take nothing away from what Jose done before and what Antonio done before. He has changed the concept.
So you're talking footballistically, but also for a foreigner who's never worked in England before with a disparate group of players, some of whom were disaffected.
Yeah.
So just in any work situation, to bring all those difficult elements together and to be producing some sort of symphony of football, because it's beautiful.
I'm really enjoying trying to analyse why at the moment. And it's been really good. I found out, because immediately you say, oh, the first game they play against Man City, and you think, all right, there's your problem there. Jorginho gets caught in the ball, you stop him, then it's all dead. And then you watch, well, Jorginho wouldn't have done that well for that long had he only one trick in his book. And then you watch him a bit more, and you see that when they do one thing, he adapts it to do something else. And then you start thinking, oh my goodness, how many players, and I'd ask this of you, how many players can control a game that you've ever seen to the level he does? Now, there's very, very few that I can remember. Now, Iniesta, I think, clearly. Pirlo, obviously could do that. Control the tempo and think, but how many, really, can control an entire game?
No.
But he does.
Extremely few.
He does. And it's an extraordinary thing.
Stan had moments. Redondo had moments to the level you're talking about. Maybe not so often, but...
It's extraordinary.
You're also only talking about the ultra elite.
And to do it in the Premier League, and to do it in a different style, and to do it so quickly, and it might not last forever, I don't know.
No.
But I've not seen, I'm very impressed by that. I love the fact that, and by the way, didn't know how good Kovacic was either.
They hid him away from you because when he moved from Inter and when he was at Real Madrid the first time, you could see the one, although he was played in an organising, defending role at Real Madrid, what he came as was somebody who really loved the movement between the middle of midfield and the attacking phase and the box, and he had it. And they kind of just squeezed the juice out of him, the life out of him, given the wrong amount of time at the wrong times. But you knew, one, given his love of the ball and moving it, and also because Croats are usually pretty robust people, I knew there was something coming back, because I think he was going to rediscover his enjoyment of being a top quality footballer again.
Well, I'm sure you'll look out for it, but there was done a technical thing, the game I watched about 3 weeks ago. And it's very different from the players we were talking about before, you know, the ones like Silva's and Matos and all that. But Cesc was playing in that central Jorginho role, and he was doing his version of it, which is very different from Jorginho, which Cesc, fabulous, beautiful player, one of the best passes I've ever seen of a ball, but he wasn't developing the space in the same way that Kovacic was playing. And it was a moment where they were getting the ball from the back, and Kovacic did something, a bit of movement to get the ball, moved it again and moved away, and the whole thing just opened up. And I sure have spotted Cesc turn around going, was that how you do it? And for Cesc to do that, for considering
that's
how
that
is some level, and for him to buy into it as much as he is. So, in short, don't care. I'd like them to win it, but I don't care. I love watching them at the moment.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit cheesy here and say, Pat Nevin, not only has this been a real joy, my heart is bigger than it was when I came in, because we've talked about things that matter and that are joyful. And don't lean across and punch me now, you're not a violent man. But Pat, we've been picking apart the Blues. So now, why don't we close on...
There can be no other way to close.
Picking the Blues. I like that, picking apart the Blues, picking the Blues, no?
It'll do.
Pat, thank you for your generosity and your
absolute
fun
pleasure.
And sharing all of that with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Brilliant.
Thank you for joining us for season 2018-19. We've got huge creative plans for the months ahead, but we do need your help to make them happen. Please go right now to patreon.com/GrahamHunter and become a socio, become a paying member, and get an extra big interview every month plus loads of bonus content. Last season, socios listened to 9 exclusive big interviews, including Rafa van der Vaart, Troy Deeney, Roberto Di Matteo, and loads of me talking about football. The Premier League, the Champions League, Spanish football. I'm sure they enjoyed it and you will too. Support us, join us. Thank you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.